In brightest day, in blackest night, no idea what's going on. I'm kind of scared. We're talking about Absolute Green Lantern. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are back to talk about another new comic in the Absolute DC Universe, Absolute Green Lantern. And boy, howdy, of all the ones that are pretty different from their origin stories, this is maybe the most different. My name is Drew, and joining me, the weird multi-tentacle-headed alien that has four arms for no good reason. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. I mean, clearly I'm gearing up to not be here next week, so that's fun.
Yay!
although, it's I love doing this show with you, so like that's one thing that I always love to do. So it's like, oh, well, I will miss this part.
But no, yeah, you won't.
I will. But yeah, we are here with another book from the second wave of the Absolute DC Universe. And as Drew said at the top of the show, a possibly the most different take that we've seen so far. And I kind of thought they weren't going to get too different than how really the last three books, but specifically the last one, because Wonder Woman and Batman specifically still felt like Wonder Woman and Batman books. And they really did nail that whole, like, oh, we are recreating them, but you're still going to feel like this is the character.
Right.
And to a degree, I feel that with Superman, but like you said in that episode, we've seen so many similar, like, alternate versions of Superman and done in a certain way that it didn't feel as maybe fresh as it could have, but it still felt like Superman.
The thing about this book, though, is that while we have a lot of different Green Lantern characters and a lot of different Green Lanterns themselves, this book supposes that they're all buddies and none of them have superpowers until they all apparently maybe get very different superpowers, because the way that, and again, we read five issues of this. That was the issues that we had available on DC Universe. I know there's a sixth issue out. I did not get a chance to read it. But I don't know that it's going to answer a lot of questions, much like the Flash book last week, where we kind of were still in the setup phase, that we are firmly in the setup phase after five issues. And you have a Hal Jordan that is probably the most unlike Hal Jordan that we have seen. Weirdly, I feel like he reads more like Kyle Rayner.
Mm-mm.
Only because his whole deal is that he's a nerdy collectibles dealer, and Kyle was all about anime and manga in his Green Lantern powers.
Kyle before Superhero Life was an artist, some comic book creator isekai themselves, I think it was Ron Mars, into a comic book character. That's sure.
But it's also weird in that, like, whereas in Batman we have Batman, in Superman we have Superman, in Wonder Woman we have Wonder Woman, in Flash we have kind of the two Flashes, but mostly Wally West that we're talking about. But in Absolute Green Lantern, we have Hal, we have John Stewart, we have Joe Mullen, we have Guy Gardner, we may have Simon Baz. I didn't get to that point in the book, but we're trying to give everybody a backstory. And when you have this many characters, it's just kind of weird. but I don't hate what they're doing here. So, Miles, where do you want to kick off with this?
Well, all right. So the kind of log line, and if you go to Wikipedia, it says that Absolute Green Lantern is a superhero horror comic book. And we mentioned this last week that they were going kind of in a sci-fi horror direction. And it's certainly a dark sci-fi. I struggle to call it horror specifically yet. There are certainly some body horror aspects because this takes some directions that are going to be surprising to long-term Green Lantern fans. Are probably going to have a heart attack when they read this. but I mean, this book vibe-wise, it certainly reminds me of a Vertigo book. And a book that would have been put out by some like new hot young indie creative team, maybe something like the most recent. I think was it Vertigo or Black? I have to look, but I know it was DC. I think they put it under the Black Label or whatever they call it now. Nice House by the Lake, which is
I don't think they're doing Vertigo anymore. But yes,
no, I don't think so either. I think it might be under Black Label, or they might have just put it under Vertigo as like a kind of a honorary thing.
I need to finish that book, by the way, because I started that book and it was just like
so good. Super dark.
It was so good, but it was so dark that it was like, I don't know if I can do this right now. And he's since finished that book and then gone on to like a side story book or another book, which is.
Yes. So they have resurrected at least the label of Vertigo. I don't think the imprint itself is active because the spiritual sequel, Nice House by the Sea, has the Vertigo plastered on the cover. And I can't remember if Lake is, and I'm not going to look for my hardcover behind me at right this second, but I want to say it started as a DC Black Label, so now is currently Vertigo. But but this has that offbeat vibe that made Vertigo special. And I will absolutely give Al Ewing and the team its flowers for that, because it does like, if this wasn't called Green Lantern, I might be a lot more invested in what's going on, to be perfectly honest.
Well, and they're not afraid of kind of doing some dark stuff with this. Now, I didn't look at what this book was rated, but like, there is a moment early on in these books where a green dome falls down across the city of Evergreen, Nevada, which is apparently a city that has existed in Green Lantern comics before, and a dude riding a motorcycle slams into it and
at 100 miles an hour
and just smashes to bits. You see an eye fly away. You see a skull get crushed. Like, it's not a full R-rated book, but there is certainly some implied
dismemberments in this book aplenty. Yeah, so we were like every book we've read prior, we have a current timeline and a 5 days ago or X amount of time ago timeline. This happened to be 5 days ago. And we start with Hal Jordan. And I get why they did this, because it will be the most like surprising of introductions, because Hal Jordan is walking by himself down a lonely road, the only road he's ever known. And sorry, I had to.
Oh, no. Miles, we're talking about Green Lantern, not Green Day. Please stay on topic.
I had to. So he's walking on a stretch of highway, and he gets stopped by a police officer. And at first, it seems kind of, you know, congenial
until the police officer escalates.
Yeah, well, there's that. But Hal won't take his hand out of his pocket, and he has his hand situated in a way that makes it look like he's holding something. And we don't know what that is, even at the end of the scene. But basically, the cop is escalating the situation. Take your hand out of your jacket. And then the next panel, the cop is a pile of ash.
Yeah, you don't even see a pile of ash. You just see...
You see smoke.
You see nothingness, a crater in the asphalt, and a badge slightly melted. Like that.
Yeah. And Hal is clearly not dealing with his situation very well.
Honestly, that was one thing. But when he goes to the diner after that, it is just like, it's crazy that what happens in the diner that spoiler.
Yes. And this is kind of a scene in a lot of different horror films. I've certainly seen this scene before. And yeah, Hal is, he comes in to get some water, but he's just giving off this vibe. And then they start, the evergreen comes on TV of what's happening. And then he makes some line about how it's his fault. He's still got his hand in his pocket. And the other one's not pulling out peace sign. I got all
Miles,
the references, David.
We're talking about Green Lantern, not Green Alanis Morissette, okay?
Basically wipes out most of the diner until we see a surge of green light, and there is Joe.
But we have
in kind of Green Lantern garb.
Yeah, but this has kind of gone back and forth as we have interacted mm-hmm. with a 5 days ago, where we do have a very different Hal Jordan. He's not a fighter pilot. He doesn't seem to have a tremendous amount of willpower, but he's living in, it's apparently from Evergreen, Nevada, where he's hanging out with his longtime friends, Joe Mullen, who has just returned to the city from somewhere else where she has had a situation happen with a former romantic partner but Joe
ex-wife,
is still,
I think.
If they're still wearing the wedding ring, but
we don't know the complete marital
status. We don't know
the
complete story.
And also, she's having a fight with Guy Gardner, but at the same time, longtime fans would be like, well, who isn't?
Yeah, but we also, so Guy Gardner is apparently the sheriff in Evergreen.
Which,
that,
I gotta say, the most egregious thing that this book does is they take away his hair.
He is bald. You know, if this book was all about Guy Gardner, it would say, you know, no willpower, no Oa, no hair.
Yeah,
because that would
exactly
be very funny.
It really would.
but we don't interact with Guy very much. He does not seem to be that bad of a dude in this.
No, he seems like he's written as a standard sheriff. You get none of the kind of hot-headedness. In fact, he's actually the even keel one, because down descends a character that everyone who knows Green Lantern would be pretty familiar with in Abin Sur.
This is where things go a little wild for me, because they say
this is actually where I buck a lot with this book too.
So Abin Sur is there. But it's no Abin Sur that we've ever seen before. It is a four-armed, naked alien beast with these two tentacles. He looks like a cross between Bib Fortuna from Return of the Jedi and Majin Buu from Dragon Ball Z.
Which are the two comparisons that we both individually came at with each other when we were reading this book.
Exactly. He's got like these two big things coming out of the back of his head, and he's not wearing any clothes. He's just kind of flesh toned, and he speaks in weird phrasing, and he speaks as if he is speaking from the green light itself, but it's not in any way that we've ever seen it before. He is not the Abin Sur, like none of the Green Lantern stuff that we know of how the Green Lanterns work is in this book
at all
yet.
Except for one thing.
And that is to fear. They call it QARD, but I know it more as Q-W-A-R-D, Quard, which is like the ancient enemies of the Owens who made the Green Lantern rings, and they made the Yellow Lantern rings. Blah, 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 blah. We
also learn... gold affects the green shields.
Is it gold or is it just because it's yellow? I don't know.
I don't know either, because they did a thing where like they did a whole test, because John Stewart here is the big, like, we made a comment about Hal Jordan being a nerd. John Stewart's the big nerd. He's the big philosophy nerd here. He thinks he knows things, and not, I mean, he thinks period, he knows things period. And low key, probably the most interesting character in this book so far.
Yeah. And when what happens to him, you're like, well, what do we do now? Although we learn later on that's not the case, because it definitely looks like he is killed by Abensur. Although, granted, a lot of people look like they are killed by Abensur in this book. And it, as it turns out,
and some were.
They're not. Well, most of them weren't. A couple of them were, which kind of sucks, but you know, whatever. But yeah, there's so much weird going on with this book, and as it turns out, and again, spoilers for the first five issues of this book, it looks like to me we are dealing with not just the Green Lanterns, but we are dealing with a power that is going to give all of our various characters different lantern powers based on the entire color spectrum, because we have Joe getting green, we have Hal getting black, which is the Death Lantern, the Black Hand, and all of this, we have John Stewart getting yellow, apparently.
Yeah, and yellow certainly means something very different in this spectrum, I think, than it does in the current universe.
Yeah.
Because the way he is vibing is very different than like any Yellow Lantern I've seen before.
But the fact that we are also introduced to these other characters, like Guy, who we know Guy isn't dead, but will come back, whether Guy is going to be red for anger or purple for justice or whatever purple
pretty,
is
pretty sure they'll make him red.
maybe they will, but
I think it's in the sixth issue they insinuate the red power. I just don't know who has it.
Yeah. I would say that like Guy doesn't like, because he stands down, that makes might make me think that they might make him purple just to kind of throw it off, because there was a very famous DC run where Guy Gardner was a Red Lantern, which, for the record, was awesome.
Yeah, it was very good.
Love that run.
And red may not be anger here.
That's true, because the emotional spectrum seems different. Well, one, it doesn't seem like it's an emotional spectrum. I don't really know what's happening at the end of issue five.
Yeah, because here's the weird thing. And I know it sounds like we're kind of stumbling over ourselves, but this book's got a lot of big ideas and not a lot of like exploration of those ideas so far.
Yeah.
When Abensur comes down, and I think I can't remember if this is in five or six, where they kind of showcase that like Hal got the black power because he shot and killed Abensur.
Yes. Joe got the green power because she was wearing a gold wedding band and punched at him, and that basically stole Abensur's green power. And then Hal got the black power from shooting Abensur. And then they're both sucked into this weird Green Lantern spaceship that's in the shape of the Green Lantern symbol that has then crashed into the town of Evergreen, Nevada, where we learn that inside there is some version of Jon Stewart that is saying, hey, have no fear, let's talk about this. Which is a whole other wild thing.
In that sequence, because Joe confronts Abensur, and he, in his own way, basically explains that this is how they judge planets, is they don't come and, you know, have a contest. They just go to some random spot and judge them a chunk of people. in a controlled setting. And he says the only reason that even the people that got killed was because of how they acted. You know, Rita, who is the cop that gets decapitated, shot her gun at Abensor, and he deflected it. The person who got killed because of that died because of her actions. He said, I didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
And
well, he killed Rita.
And everyone that you think is dead is not dead.
He killed Rita for killing that person. But
right. Yeah, that's true. He did. He said he did say that that person died for.
I think it was it. He only killed two people.
I think so. Maybe just one, but the second person died because of his actions.
He killed two and people and cut off that one dude's
hand. Because of the dome, because of the motorcycle crash. But the way he talks makes him sound like the Silver Surfer, like he's a harbinger of something to come. And people keep talking about how the Dark Star is coming.
Well, and this is also an Abensur that Abensur appears to be in this version a title, not a name of a specific individual.
Yes, there's what, Sur Rao and one other one.
It's Sur Rao, which Rao is typically...
Very interesting use of word.
It's typically like the Kryptonian god.
Yes.
Which is weird. Let me see if I can figure this out. Wow, apparently Mogo shows up later.
Yes.
I love Mogo.
Mogo is referenced in issue 6.
Yeah, Sur Rao Aur, A-U-A-U-R, and there's one other one. I wish I'd made a note about it. I can't find it.
So what the thing I struggle with this book is Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman all made very good efforts to kind of tell an opening salvo, an opening arc that you can follow, easily understand, and helps establish the character. That so far in this second wave, they have both been very serialized, long-form attempts. And I don't dislike that they are doing something drastically different. That's not what I'm bucking against. Like, I some of these ideas are very, very interesting. What I'm having trouble with is, with these opening three books, that they have generated an expectation for this universe. And this has happened every single time one of the big two makes kind of an imprint universe or a secondary universe. It's happened with the Ultimate books, even in the early 2000s when they were explosive, because you had Ultimate Spider-Man, huge, huge book. And then Ultimate X-Men was good, but not as good.
Yeah.
And the Ultimates at the time was very well celebrated. Most people now look at it as super cringe.
Yes.
but at the time, it was very well celebrated. And every subsequent book afterwards was more and more diminishing turns creatively. The Fantastic Four, like, its big call to fame as it introduces everyone to Marvel Zombies. Whoop-de-doo. The Ultimate Iron Man stuff is fine. And then you have, like, an Ultimate Daredevil Electro miniseries that didn't really go anywhere. So you have these kind of things where, like, they fall in love with the idea of, like, okay, we got to expand now. We have these big books. We can make the universe bigger. And that's cool. And I like the idea that they are toying with big, crazy, wild ideas. My problem is I don't know if these stories are, for this universe, inherently great for serialized superhero storytelling. They are interesting and they are very cool twists. But if within 6 issues, because I've read issue 6 and it still feels like it's part of a story. Like it ends in a cliffhanger. You have no answers. It does not establish things in the way that Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman did. And even Superman ended open-endedly. But
we complained about Superman being a lot of setup for the universe, and I feel like Green Lanterns, and I'm pluralizing it, even though I know they're not all green,
feels very similar in that respect. There's just so much setup. And again, we're only at issue 5/6 that Miles has actually gotten to read.
That I feel like I'm reading the first part of a novel. And I questioned this, and I said this to Drew before we started recording. I was wondering, maybe this would have been better served as an original graphic novel rather than an ongoing series.
But we're setting up other stuff that, like, we're setting up that, what it was, Hector, what's his name?
Hector, was it Hector Hand?
Hector Howard.
Howard, yeah, some of that. Yeah, you have reference to, oh, has the Lazarus Corporation got here yet? No?
Yeah.
Cool.
We're referencing a lot of other stuff, but it's also like, as much as I know about the Green Lantern universe, can I tell you what I know the least about in the Green Lantern universe? Human characters. Todd Rice is a character prior to this in DC Universe. He is the character Obsidian. He's the son of a Green Lantern, Alan Scott. He's the twin brother of well-known Green Lantern character Jade. Cameron Case is a Batman Chase. Character primarily. She was a agent, a private investigator, later a DEO agent, and she's had a bunch of stuff since the late 90s. Black Hand is formerly William Hand, who was a Green Lantern bad guy that died and became, you know, the Black Lantern in the big
Blackest Night,
which was a cool story. But
very cool story. Jeff Johns did some cool stuff because I brought him kind of back in Infinite Crisis and refer to him. Like, you know, I remember the end of Infinite Crisis, like, you know, Seymour in Blackest Night. And this was like the summer of, what was it, 2003 or 4? And it's like, summer 2005. And I was like, wait, next year?
Yeah. But ultimately, what gets me about this, because I like what they're doing and I like what they're setting up, and I like the idea that if you have all of these Green Lantern characters and you have all of these colors on the spectrum that we have established rings and powers for, that you're going to introduce them all as different colors. And this is me projecting, this is me not knowing. But when you combine all the powers of the different Green Lantern lights, or the different lantern lights, excuse me, not just green, you end up making a white light, which is the most powerful light in the universe. All of this stuff is interesting to me. It's just that, unlike Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman and really even Absolute Flash, and largely part of this is because I just don't know Joe Mullen very well, because I haven't read Green Lantern Far Sector, the main book that she is in. Hal Jordan being like the quote unquote iconic Green Lantern character doesn't feel like the Hal Jordan that we have met before at all. And that has unfortunately been the case for everybody else that we have seen in these Absolute books, that at their core, Batman's still the same, Superman's still the same, Wonder Woman's still the same, The Flash is still the same. But this Hal feels so different. And at least right now in the book where I am, he's kind of the bad guy. And that just, it's so unlike the rest of the Absolute books as a result, that I'm left wanting, because I'm sure they're going to pull out of that. I'm sure they're going to make this work. But right now, I don't see it. It feels too, like, I know it was pitched as a horror book, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but it just feels slightly too grimdark and slightly too like the old ways of doing a quote unquote dark universe than what Absolute has been so far.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's why I've tried to like kind of parse myself, because on one hand, I don't dislike this book.
I really enjoyed reading this book.
But I don't know if what they're specifically doing in the way they're doing it is the right move. And that's kind of what I'm bucking against, because I mean, I'm enjoying what I'm reading. I'm definitely excited to see where it goes, but this, and I'm not against, hey, let's introduce some of this kind of Vertigo style storytelling into our superheroes. Okay. That's very cool. But when you already establish kind of the flavor of the universe in your first wave, it makes it difficult not to have similar expectations for the Flash and the Green Lantern, who are also big superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that's my biggest problem, is it doesn't feel like it meshes with the other three, even though tonally it does. And they're like, I appreciate the efforts to do something different within this universe. I think this is the place where you do it. Absolutely. It's weird to have kind of polarizing opinions, like duking it out, because I feel both ways about this book.
Yeah.
And it's very, like, very odd.
I really enjoyed reading this book. I don't think it accomplishes the goal of what the Absolute books were supposed to do based on the log line of the book.
That, and especially with a book like this, I think within six issues, you need to have a solid arc that says something. And having read all six issues, which will be collected in December, like, this is the first arc, it does not do that. I can read the first six issues of Absolute Batman. I can read the first six issues of Absolute Wonder Woman, specifically those two. And I'm like, this is exactly what I want. And they are very different. They are especially Wonder Woman, very, very Batman different. Too.
And this book references what's going on in Coast City, you know?
Like, yeah, that's, and they even say something about, like, the weird stuff happening back east, which I'm assuming is a reference to Gotham. Well, I think they make it a Gotham reference.
Yeah, they even say we have our own Coast City going on. Like, it was a whole thing that was...
Not Coast City, Gateway City.
Gateway City, sorry.
Yeah. Right. No, they do reference Coast City, which is where... Cameron Chase is.
Okay.
And you know what? I think I've goofed up. No, I haven't. Because I was making sure I wasn't confusing Cameron Chase with Chase Meridian, who is also a Batman character.
Yeah, I mean, look, the name Chase was very popular for a set of time.
Yeah. But it does put the Absolute Universe in an interesting spot at this point, because, okay, now we've introduced your Batman, your Wonder Woman, Superman, Flash to a degree, and to a degree Green Lantern, even though nothing's defined. And I think that's my biggest problem with this book right now, and why I would have probably preferred it be like some sort of OGN as opposed to a strict ongoing series, is because, like, after six issues, you have an idea of what's going on, but you don't have an idea what's going on. And that to me is a problem with this book.
Yeah.
I am excited to see where it goes and where it lands. I am excited to see what Al Ewing does with Absolute Evil crossover in, I think that starts in December, but this is a tough one for me, because when I first said, I was like, oh, this might be my least favorite of the bunch, but it's not. I think it's a very cool sci-fi horror story that has Green Lantern flavoring, but it just hasn't hit its stride yet. And it absolutely deserves its time to.
For sure. And that's the thing that gets me right now, which is, it's so funny that I was watching YouTube Shorts 2 days ago before I'd started reading these books, and the YouTube short I watched was all about that New 52 run where Kyle Rayner is suddenly given all of the rings of the color spectrum and all of the different Lantern Corps hate him for it because they think he's doing something weird and are attacking him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a full, like, Kyle as the White Lantern thing.
which was in, was White Lantern was introduced in the Blackest Night crossover with everything. But it's like, yeah, I really like what's going on in this book. I think it's interesting. I like the characters. I think everything that's going on is in, like all the setup and stuff is super interesting. It's just when I was thinking about what the Absolute Universe was going to be and what was supposed to be, this is like too different from the expectation. And maybe that's what you have to do when you talk about Green Lantern, because unlike a lot of the other characters, there are just so damn many of them. There are how many Green Lanterns do we have that we know that are just human? You've got Hal, you've got John, you've got Guy, you've got Joe, you've got Simon,
you've got Alan,
Jessica,
you've got Jade,
you've got Alan, you've got Jade,
Kyle.
That's of just the humans that we're talking about, that's 9 lanterns.
Yeah, which the funny thing about that is 2814 has so many human lanterns. Each sector is supposed to only have one. The sector, which is more than one world. But for whatever reason, good old Earth is just like filthy with Green Lanterns.
And honestly, I was kind of upset that Simon wasn't going to be included until you told me that you think he might be referenced in issue 6.
I think he's referenced as Chase's partner in issue 6. He's even wearing kind of a Midnighter style mask, driving a convertible. It's awesome.
But logically, we are likely getting set up to see every known Green Lantern in the DC, every known human Green Lantern in DC becoming a different color on the spectrum. And all of that is so interesting. It's just, it's going to take a while to get to where it's actually interesting.
And we haven't even talked about, I mean, Carol, who's technically a Star Sapphire, you know, she's human too.
But she's not even in this book.
No, she's not. I'm just saying, I'm talking about another human lantern type character. And that's not including everyone who got converted after Blackest Night. Because you had all the White Lanterns who were all humans, basically.
I mean, Batman has been both a Green Lantern and a Yellow Lantern. It's all
a Black Lantern and a White Lantern. Actually, that white outfit was pretty dope.
Yeah, I mean, every Batman outfit is.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I grew up with Kenner toys. Every Batman album's outfit's pretty dope. It's like Spider-Man. You slap on a design and say, "Ah, it's pretty cool." But this is the book I really want to love, and I definitely want to follow it because I appreciate that they are doing something different, and in a way that, like, while frustrating as someone who, you know, is wanting to read your month-to-month comics. And this one, you know, the second wave in general, I don't think has been very friendly to that. This is definitely a graphic novel read, if I've ever read one.
I mean, but again, that's the thing. It's like, I love what they're doing. I just need to see all of it, but we only have this much of it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the same place as Flash, but I think what they're doing here is way more interesting than what Flash is doing.
I agree based on the 5 issues that we read of both of these books, but we'll see how that plays out down the line.
Yes, and we already know that going into Martian Manhunter that it's a 12-issue limited series. However, we also know that it was initially a 6-issue series that was given 6 more issues. So we'll see how that turns out.
So with that said, we are going to end our discussion of Absolute Green Lantern / Absolute Lanterns, which is what I'm going to start calling it because I bet they're going to change the name in a few issues. And we'll talk about what we're doing not next week. Next week, we're off. Miles is on vacation. He's going to be not dealing with anything DC Comics related. Maybe some Marvel Comics related things.
That's true.
Because he'll be in Orlando, Florida. Go it's say true. If you're in Orlando, go say hi to Miles next week.
Please don't. I'm unless, on vacation. Unless no one talk to me.
Unless you do it in a really cool way. But when
for sure.
When we return the following week, we are going to be talking about the first, hopefully, maybe only five, but hopefully six issues, depending on if DC Universe gets it, of Absolute Martian Manhunter.
I'll be reading all six.
Martian Man, this book is a limited series and it will only be 12 issues and then done. Now, whether they pick it up after that, who knows? But based on everything I have seen of this, the art looks so cool. Javier it Rodriguez does. Is doing the art where it just looks like super pop art inspired. It looks so fun and interesting. Denis Camp is writing the book itself, and what's funny is that he wrote on the Ultimates back in the day. But yeah, he's been responsible for a number of different things, including some of the more recent Harley Quinn books, some Valiant books with Bloodshot and some Miller World books. But like it looks like such an interesting romp that is stylistically so different than a lot of the other Absolute DC books that we've seen so far. And I can't wait to get through it.
It's popping with color and I'm excited about that. It looks very pop art. And I am looking forward to giving this book a read.
Me three. So that's, again, not going to be next week, but the week after. In the meantime, if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of our show going back 13 years, almost 14 years. Actually, I think we're past 14 years at this point. You can go online to many different social media networks and find us at themoreyounerd or /themoreyounerd. But of course, you can also email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. And now we end the show as we always do with a rousing
nerd out. To nerd for y'all.